South Africans haven't got too much longer to wait until we have a new ambassador in South Africa. His name is Brett Bazell III, and somebody who knows him and can give us some insight into what we can expect is Matt Chauncey. Matt has lived in South Africa. He now lives in the United States. He's an American, and we're contacting him in Alabama. But I'm sure during your time here in South Africa, well, I hope you heard the song called "Hier kom die Alibama."
That's right.
back in the I suppose during the time of the American Civil War.
You had sort of a Confederate privateer that was captained by an Admiral Sims, there's a Sims, Alabama, near Mobile Bay. And the CSS Alabama was so successful, it single-handedly shut down all commercial shipping from New England because no insurance company wanted to insure the cargo of these boats. And so it resulted in an international case after the Civil War called the Alabama Claims, where the U.S. government sued Great Britain for building that ship and then letting it escape to be in the service of the Confederacy. So, and it did spend some time in Cape Town, which became the subject of a song, which is still sung today. Very familiar with it.
Indeed it is. And it's also interesting for you as a bit of a segue to show us that you have deep knowledge. I've spent time with you. I've listened to your stories and got some insights. And well, the subject that we need to focus about today is Brett Bazell. But before we go there, will you just give us a bit of your background? You've actually lived in a little town called Stanford.
That's right, which we affectionately call the center of the universe. And we lived in Stanford for about 5 years, had two children born in the village. Before that, we lived for 3 years in East Africa. It was all in connection with the work I've done with an American NGO for the last 25 years that does work in East Africa. But for security concerns at that particular time, when we were in East Africa, we decided to relocate to South Africa. So we went to a very a small rural village about an hour and a half outside of Cape Town and just built some of the or developed some of the greatest friendships we ever had. We, in fact, a couple of our kids still live in South Africa. And so I would like to think we have a very permanent connection with the country. And I'm one of the few Americans that actually think about South Africa every day.
Yeah, and you got a lot of South African friends and are highly regarded by many people who are important here, who know you and engage with you. But perhaps we can focus on the new U.S. ambassador. How important is it that, A, we have a new ambassador, and B, that we have somebody like the man who's coming here? Just unpack that for us.
Well, let me just put it to you this way. You see the results in your own country when you don't have an ambassador in the United States, and the lack of that diplomatic contribution, and you're sending a lot of different mixed signals, and so you end up having all these independent delegations that are moving into this space to try to make up for the lack of having a full-time diplomatic presence, or an effective one at that. And so on the flip side, when the Americans send their ambassador finally, and it's not because we've been held up by anything in South Africa, it's purely a part of the confirmation procedure in the United States that's generally pretty slow, particularly in a very confrontational environment that we have right now in D.C. You're going to see, I think, with this new ambassadorship, an acceleration of what I hope to be very positive developments in U.S.-South African relations.
That's an interesting take on it, given that many in South Africa have already written off the new ambassador as being a right winger, as a Trump clone, and somebody they don't really want to deal with.
Yes, well, I mean, that's the media, and I think that's one of the reasons why President Trump chose Mr. Bozell, because Mr. Bozell has built a career dealing with the bias in the media and exposing it. When we were growing up, we had this presumption that when we turned on the nightly news and we, whether it was Tom Brokaw or Dan Rather, some of these great media personalities, that we were going to get an impartial, unbiased summary of the day's events. And what Brent Bozell showed way back in the 1980s was that even at that time, we couldn't count on the media giving us the real story. It was still filled with bias and most of the time left-leaning bias. And he built his organization exposing that. And so naturally, you're going to find sort of the mainstream media not taking much of a liking to this guy, because he's constantly pulling back the curtain and showing you who's really in control and showing you what the real message is. And it's oftentimes not the one that they're trying to convey to an otherwise unsuspecting public.
Cody from Paul has sold multiple vehicles to We Buy Cars. Suspicious? I think so.
Is that a crime?
No. Where are you getting the cars?
I buy them and I sell them at the spot, like a normal person.
Okay.
No, man, I'm just an accounting student. I know a good deal when I see one.
That's Excel meant. What's more stressful, tax season or selling a car at We Buy Cars?
Tax season, obviously.
We Buy Cars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
How do they do that? Just help us, help those who don't understand the media world that well, how media pulls the wool over people's eyes and how Mr. Bozell now has exposed that.
Well, the rule is in almost everything, not just the media, but in politics, is you follow the money. You follow the money. Who owns, consider the fact that when I was growing, our generation, when we were younger, you had hundreds of different media companies. You had, you know, thousands of newspapers, at least in the United States. And they were controlled, some by families, some by, you know, just individuals. And then there was this big consolidation. And you could probably use, this is something that AI is actually useful for. I don't have it in front of me right now, but if you just ask ChatGPT or some other AI, you know, how few companies actually own 90% of the media, the mainstream media. You'll be shocked. It's just, you can probably put them on one hand. There's so few that are out there that really control the narrative. And so if it doesn't matter what platform you're reading or listening to or watching, they're all going to say the same thing. And some of these, there's actually many news sites that you can find that just kind of consolidate all the different reports from around the country in these little TV stations, these small stations, and it shows how all of these presenters, all of these talking heads are literally saying the same thing. The script is written somewhere in New York, and there it's farmed out to all the different satellites, and they all say the same thing. So that's a lot of power. And I think, and I really like the fact that in the information age now, with the thanks to South Africa and Elon Musk, we have some spaces that are not fully controlled by these big media conglomerates that were actually, you can hear the other side. And we have organizations like yourself, like BizNews, which is this not beholden to any particular special interest. It's its own entity, and it can actually tell the side of the story that not everybody is going to hear. With President Trump understands, I think, this new age very well. He's a very media savvy president, and he understands that we're in a new kind of Cold War, and it's an information war. And so when he's dealing with difficult countries, in the case of our diplomacy, he would like ambassadors, he would like representatives who understand the nature of this warfare. And in the case of South Africa, which is a very special case to him personally, President Trump has selected someone, I believe, who understands this battlefield very well. He understands the weapons used in this war, and he knows how to deal with it and respond to it.
Wow. That's quite an interesting way of framing the whole picture. and one that, again, is not in people's faces that often? Because I suppose it's not something you really think about. If you're watching the television news and something comes across, well, you'll accept it because they must know better. They wouldn't lie to you. But what you're saying is that there has been bias. There's been a lot of bias, and he's made a business out of actually tracking that. How big is his business?
It's been around for a long time, and it's a 501, what we call a 501c3. It's a charity. It's not technically like a for-profit business. It's actually a non-for-profit business, and it has a lot of following, and I'm not sure exactly what the budget is, but I'm pretty sure it's in the tens of millions of US dollars. So, and that is purely people who have been contributing to this organization over time, and they built up a following of people who appreciate the fact that there is somewhere they can go to get the rest of the story, as the saying goes, or just another side of the issue. Or the MRC might not present the other side. It'll just show you how the main narrative is skewing the information, or being very selective and not handling the context correctly, or making or purposefully trying to push you to come to this particular type of conclusion. So again, this is, I think people are wising up, and I look at the younger generation, I look at my kids' generation, and they grew up in the information age. They're under no delusions about the fact that there is a lot of terrible content. There's a lot of deception. And so they already suspect what they read. They already suspect what they see. And you can, and in the age of the AI generation, it's even more the case. I just saw a graph that more than 50% of the content, it just passed that threshold, more than 50% of the content online, and that's a lot of content, is generated by AI. And so pretty soon, this trend keeps going. You're going to have most of the conversation online being computers talking to computers. And so being able to discern what is real is going to become very important. And again, I think politicians like Donald Trump, who are very savvy anyway when it comes to messaging, when they're dealing with a country or an area of the world that needs this kind of this gravitas and this knowledge, Mr. Bozell is, I think, a terrific candidate for this role. He came out of the blue. Nobody expected him for this job, and I think it's a real credit to President Trump picking someone who I believe is perfectly designed for this role, because he has no experience in South Africa, so he's not coming in with any type of real confirmation bias, if you will. So he's going to be someone who listens to both sides. He's going to be very fair. I see him as a gentleman of the old school in the best possible sense. He's very loyal. He's a good friend to the president. I think that's why the president primarily chose him, because he knows men of his generation with his reputation going back many decades in Washington, a very good reputation. He's someone that the president can trust. He knows that he will be a working ambassador. This is not a billionaire donor who gets to pick his assignment overseas. This is someone who is a movement conservative, someone who's been in the trenches pretty much his whole life, and understands this, how the game is played, so to speak, but has kept his character, has kept his reputation, and has been known as someone who's very trustworthy. And that is exactly why the president chose Brent Bozell for this role.
It's a tough job, though, Matt. He's coming into a little bit of a lion's den, given that there are, well, it's almost like he would be able to rate better, perhaps, with someone like Jacob Zuma, who's got all his loyalists around him. He thinks the same way. He's a little bit older. Whereas the ANC is a bit of a snake pit at the moment. We're seeing that played out in public. How do you think he's going to handle this kind of challenge that is going to be before him?
Well, Obviously, that remains to be seen. We'll have to wait and see. But based on what I, in my conversations with him and his desire for South Africa, I think some of it came out in his hearing. If you watch and what, if you read his statement and what he said, he would really like to focus on things that can bring people together, which is the economy. And that is something that is of great concern to South Africa. You have a very high unemployment rate. You have a very low growth rate. You have people are getting poorer every year in the country because your population is growing faster than your GDP. And you the infrastructure is breaking down. And so there is a great need for foreign investment, for internal investment and growth. And I think that let me just put it this way. In one of my last conversations with him, Brent Bozell told me that South Africa, you know, has experienced political freedom when now everyone can vote and everyone's treated equally. It's had religious freedom where you have the right to worship as you choose. But where it's struggling right now is in economic freedom. And those are the areas that you and your channel dwell on a lot. The expropriation without compensation, the government strangulation on businesses, the race-based hiring quotas, the corruption in tenders, the wasted money, the scandals. Those are things that are really holding the country back. And so one of the things that Brent Bozell said in his hearing is that he would like to see increased American investment into the country, but investment that's different from the kind that you see from the East, which treats South Africa is just big resource dump that they can come and just grab and take and pull away. Whereas America would like to invest within South Africa so that, for instance, he mentioned this in his hearing, that we can help South Africa, our companies can help South African companies with their refinement capacities so that you can refine the minerals that you have in your country and then sell them yourself instead of just shipping out the raw materials, having them refined elsewhere and not getting the full benefit of that. And so that is a kind of partnership that is a win-win, not just for America, but for South Africa, because you're developing your domestic capacity of production. And that's something that's going to drive up your job numbers and keep the money that you have in the country instead of leaving. And that's what he told me was going to be his focus. So that's good news, because that means he's going to come into the situation with a government of national unity, and he's going to want to be able to find common ground. He is a movement conservative. He is very loyal to the president. The president has a very clear agenda in South Africa in terms of what he doesn't like and what he wants to see change. That's obvious. You know, if we want to have more American companies in the country, we've got to do something about this BEE. We've got to do something about this expropriation without compensation. We have to do something about security and infrastructure. So there's a lot of challenges there. But I think that what Brent Bozell wants to do is he wants America to invest in South Africa in a way that that benefits both countries. That's not just we take from you and use for ourselves. And that, I think, that going into it is very, very good. And the fact that he is sort of tabula rasa, he's a blank slate, means that you're going to be able to, I think, accomplish more because he's not going in with that confirmation bias where he's going to have an automatic closed door with some people in interest. He's going to be able to fairly listen to both sides and hopefully be a bridge, bridging together the different interests in the country to move on a uniform policy that's going to be beneficial for everyone.
Again, there were lots of discussions early on that Joel Pollack, who is married to a South African who spent a lot of time in South Africa and in and around the politicians and parliament, was the likely ambassador. Was he ever really in the running from what you can understand, or was Bozell always going to be the man?
No, he wasn't always going to be the man. And I don't know the answer to the question other than from what Joel Pollack did say, and I believe him. He said he was on this. He was told that he was on the short list. And obviously that would make perfect sense. I think, though, at the end of the day, President Trump probably, and I'm this is totally, you know, just my brain and how I'm trying to process this, so it could be totally wrong. But I think that because South Africa is a very special case with President Trump, he wanted someone who is going to come in with not this history with the country, that he's going to come in very fresh and be able to look at everything, which is kind of like Trump's policy in Africa. And when you see AGOA going away, you see now the U.S. is now looking at each individual country and saying, okay, what can we do here? What can we do here? It's not sort of a one-size-fits-all approach. He's actually considering each country and how America's foreign policy can be advanced in each of those countries. And so that opens up a real opportunity. But if you kind of have a history, then that will color the way what you think is possible, what you think is, could be achieved. And so what I think Trump wanted was someone who will take everything and consider it very fresh.
So you have engaged with the new ambassador. Or hang on, is he the new ambassador yet? We saw the hearings.
I haven't seen a vote yet. Yeah. He's gone through his hearing, and then based on what's been happening in the last few weeks, because of the government shutdown and because of Democrat filibustering, the Republicans who control the Senate have exercised kind of a nuclear option where they're now jumbling all these conferees into a one block vote and just approving 50 at a time. And that could be, which means it could happen quite quickly. He's gone through his hearing. And then, so he might be lumped in with a bunch of other judges and ambassador picks. And then one vote he's in. And then a couple of weeks later, he's in the country. It could happen quite quickly, but, right now, because of the shutdown and politics being the way it is, it's really hard to know.
So when he does get here, and there's no question that he is going to be voted through because the Republicans have got the majority, will he have the political leverage to actually make anything happen? Or is he going to really struggle to be anything other than most ambassadors who just hang around and talk nice?
No, I think that because America is the second largest trading partner and could potentially be the largest trading partner, we've already seen in the last couple of months the terrible consequences of the Trump tariff and what it meant to tens of thousands of jobs and billions of rands in losses that you would otherwise have. So I think that there is an incentive for South Africa to really engage this new full-time diplomat for the country and see if we can't make a deal and make a deal quickly. And I think that Mr. Bozell is ready in the wings. He wants to make a deal. He's going to, of course, be representing the president. And that's what he said, several times in the hearing, is that he's going to represent the policy of the president. He's going to serve at the pleasure of the president. And I think the president's goal is to make a deal. He loves to do it. And so I think that our new ambassador to your country is going to hit the ground running, and he's going to, of course, he may want to do Table Mountain and a few other things when he arrives. But after that, drinking some Sauvignon Blanc from one of the Stellenbosch vineyards, he'll want to settle down and really get to work. And so I think you're going to have a working ambassador for the United States in your country, which is a good thing. He's not just a political appointee just to fill a seat. He's there for a specific purpose. And I think that's a net positive for South Africa.
Mm. If we ever had any doubts that President Trump has got South Africa high on his list, Then we only had to see what he did with the immigration by cancelling pretty much everybody, excepting 7,500 primarily white Afrikaners who would be allowed into the United States. That's quite a vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he has been very consistent in this, that the South, he doesn't like what's happening in South Africa. And really, it's not because he's picking on South Africa above other countries because he's just, you know, pulled a name out of a hat and decided to be tough on you guys. I think it stems from a real personal relationship that he has with South Africans that he's developed over many years, probably on the golf course. And so when you're out on the golf course with several of your excellent athletes from South Africa and you're spending a lot more time with the president than most people do. But most people would spend years to try to get, you know, an hour with the president. But, you know, you South Africans, because you punch way above your weight in sport, you end up spending a whole lot of time with the most powerful man in the world. And so what do you talk about when you're doing 18 holes? You know, you talk about what's going on at your home. And so that's the context that Donald Trump has had with South Africa over the last several years. And so when he actually became president and had the ability to do something about it, that's why you hear things like bad things are happening in South Africa. You see the Twitter rants and that sort of thing, is because it ranks very high in his consciousness. When someone brings up South Africa, that's what he sees. And again, I think that's one reason why he picked Brent Bozell. I think he wanted someone that he could trust. I think he wanted someone who understands the communication war that is the reality today. I think he wanted someone who was a blank slate, who was willing to hear both sides and treat everything fresh, just like Trump is doing in other countries with trade deals. And someone that he can count on to be loyal and to do a good job. And he has, in Brent Bozell, he has all of that. He has someone who's built a stellar reputation, a terrific organization. He's very effective. He's spoken of very highly on Capitol Hill. He has a great family that supports him. I think he's at that time of his life where he could really make a difference. And I think he's very capable and ready for it. And I just hope he gets to your country as soon as possible, because I do believe that it's going to start moving the needle in the right direction. And I'm very optimistic about it personally.
So if he looks back at the end of his term, what do you think he would view, or the media in America or Capitol Hill would say he has been a success? What would he have to achieve?
Oh, that's a great question. And I think based on what he told me, if he can move the needle forward when it comes to economic investment and development and stronger ties, or at least to get South Africa back to a non-aligned position, whereas now it's becoming much more Eastern aligned, and move them more towards this back to the center, I think that would be considered, you know, in 3 years, a job well done. I do believe that you're going to see some very forward-thinking, outside-of-the-box trade deals that are going to be proposed. I think you're going to see different avenues of engagement that are non-orthodox. And I think just because you have to deal in South Africa with things that you don't always have to deal with other countries. So you have in South Africa this, you know, broad-based state failure on many levels, on town levels, municipal levels, provincial levels. Even the national government is failing to deliver services or even respond in a timely manner to requests by their own members of their own government. And so if for businesses, for exporters, particularly for producers and manufacturers in South Africa, it's incumbent upon them to create their own avenues of trade, their own avenues. That's kind of what they've done when you look at all the different South African delegations that have gone to the United States. They're not just representing the Afrikaners. They're representing the economy. They're representing the part of society that's still functioning, that wants to continue to trade and develop and create jobs and keep the country going, because the government is doing, in often cases, such a poor job of it.
Mm. Well, it is an interesting time that we're going through into South Africa. From your perspective, having lived here, as you said earlier, for some years, how are you If you were to put your South African hat on now, the time that when you watch the Springboks playing rugby and you pull on your Springbok jersey, I hope, what would you be hoping that Brent Bazell achieves when he's here in the next 3 years? In other words, more jobs, and is that a possibility?
Yes. From my perspective, I think that the answer to a lot of problems in South Africa is to have direct engagement with, in this case, the Americans. I think that if you state-proof your economic plan in South Africa, you have a higher chance of success because the state is so dysfunctional in many areas that the less state you have involved, the more you can figure it out yourself and make it work, the better off you're going to be. And I think with the current White House, you're going to have the people on my side willing to entertain those types of proposals. So I see that there's going to be stronger bilateral ties between subnational groups in South Africa with the United States. I think you're going to see greater involvement and dialogue and cooperation between, say, the Western Cape and Washington. You're going to see some municipalities making overtures to Washington. You're going to have industry sectors that are going to be banding together, I think, and proposing their own deals with the United States. In other words, South Africans are going to do what they've always done, which is do it themselves if they need to. And that's the one thing that I tell people. I'm kind of bearish on the South African government, but I'm very bullish on her people. And that was my experience living in South Africa. People just made it work. When things started breaking down because the municipality didn't provide the services, the private sector and individuals picked up the slack and they made it work. And you see this across many, many areas of civil society. So, and that's what happens when one part starts to fail, you have to strengthen the other part that's working to kind of pick up the slack. And that's what we see in the private sector. And we see disproportionate amounts of innovation and creativity in South Africa. Even you guys punch way above your weight. I mean, just look at the type of billionaires you have in the world and how many are South African and the type of areas they're in, not just sport, but in technology and finance and all of that. So you guys have impressed the world consistently with your ability to rise above the difficulties that you have. And so I think that we're going to see that more in South Africa in the next 3 years. I think you're going to have an ambassador that is willing to entertain these kind of, unorthodox proposals, but with the understanding that they will have a net benefit on both countries. And so I'm very optimistic on that front. But I do see, if I was in South Africa, I see that greater bilateral relations between businesses, exporters, subnational entities in the country are going to be the wave of the future.
Thank you for lifting the veil on something that for many of us remains a bit of a secret, but it certainly is an exciting prospect. Matt Chauncey is based in Alabama, and as you heard earlier, he is with a NGO that has focused much of his life here in Africa, and having spent some years in South Africa as well. And he gave us some good insights on somebody he knows well, the future ambassador to Pretoria. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.